Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Maybe you've heard about the retail company LuLaRoe from a woman in your neighborhood who sells their clothing. Or maybe you've seen Instagram ads featuring their signature brightly patterned leggings. Or maybe you've caught a late night host joking about some of their more out there looks. The company, founded by husband and wife team, Deanna and Mark Stidham, uses the multi-level marketing format to run their business. Women, many moms sign up to be retailers, forking over a lot of cash to do so, with the promise they can make lots of money with more flexible hours. In fact, their Instagram still boasts this mission statement, creating freedom through fashion, serving others, and strengthening families. But as multiple lawsuits against the company allege, LuLaRoe made false promises to retailers, created defective products, which left many women in debt, with a room full of clothing they are unable to sell, including what became known as the infamous stinky leggings, like as in clothes that actually smelled bad. And earlier this year, the company agreed to pay $4.75 million to resolve a consumer protection lawsuit brought on by the Attorney General of Washington State. A fascinating new docuseries about the story of LuLaRoe features interviews with former retailers, employees, and even the founders themselves. It's called LuLaRich, and all four episodes are available to stream now on Amazon Prime. Joining us now to discuss are directors and executive producers, Jenner First. Hi, Jenner.
Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. And Julia Willoughby-Nason. You might know them from their Hulu documentary, Fire Fraud, about the Fire Festival. Hi, Julia.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having us on.
So, Jenner, when was the first time you learned about LuLaRoe?
You know, honestly, I don't spend a lot of time on social media. I found that it drains my energy, so I wasn't part of the original craze that occurred. But when our partners, Storyforce, Blythouse, and Corey Stern, brought us a package of information that they had been gathering, and this was after some of the investigative reports, and, you know, after about 2 seconds of discussing it, Julia and I immediately knew that there was so much meat on the bone and there was so much more to this story that needed to be told.
Julie, did you know anyone from your personal life who had any relationship with the company?
You know, I don't know anyone or didn't know anyone in my personal life, but it was in the ether, this sort of selling all of these athleisure wardrobe situation. I feel like they all blended together in some way. So I couldn't pinpoint the LuLaRoe brand, but yes, as someone personally who was selling it in my world, but you know, this cloud of trend is everywhere. So in a way there was a 1 degree of separation to like 1,000 degree of separation / connections to this product.
Yeah.
In my world.
Yeah. So, you know, The doc starts right off with interview footage of the founders, Deanna and Mark, and they seem very willing to sit down for an interview. What was their motive for agreeing to this interview where clearly you're documentary filmmakers, you're going to ask hard questions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of the times there's a dissonance between what a person, you know, how a person sees themselves and how a person sees their own experience and how the world sees that person. And all of our stories have been anchored around, you know, that humanistic quality that everybody, in a sense, wants the ability to tell their own story. And I think for Deanna and Mark, you know, they felt that the media had wronged them, and we were, you know, being very straight and direct with them, that we were offering them an opportunity to tell us who they were, what their intentions were, and to answer some of the tough questions. And essentially, you see what happened next in the docuseries.
So, Julia, for those who've never heard of LuLaRoe and never seen their clothing, how would you describe the product they're selling? And then how would you describe the lifestyle they're selling to the women who will go out and become LuLaRoe representatives?
Yeah, I mean, the product itself are mostly leggings, stretchy kind of synthetic modal material that's super soft and, you know, really form fits any figure. There, you know, there's no like tight elastic to contort yourself into. And the patterns are really fun. They're kind of like a 90s throwback, Saved by the Bell, graphic, you know, geometric, bright colors to like everything from like a hamburger or like a Leaning Tower of Pisa that happens to fall in your crotch sometimes. So yeah, the product has a very wacky, like circusy quality. And yeah, in the way that it was pitched to sell these leggings and wear them as basically, you know, God's gift to the world, was really selling the dream of entrepreneurship to a feminine audience where, you know, they were pitching, the company was pitching essentially, a woman can have it all these days. She can be a mother and she can also have the autonomy and of have making money and having her own business from home. So it seems like a perfect scenario, you know, but as we know that this was a form of gaslighting because there is no way for a woman to have it all when they're raising kids full time.
My guests are Jenna First and Julia Willoughby-Nason. They are the directors and executive producers of LuLaRich, which you can watch on Amazon Prime. So, Jenna, LuLaRoe functions as an MLM, multi-level marketing company. Sometimes people refer to these companies as a pyramid scheme. What did Mark and Deanne say about their company not being a pyramid scheme? And then what did experts really say?
Well, it's interesting. Not only do they deny being a pyramid scheme, they deny being an MLM, which is really fascinating. It's almost like to acknowledge, for Mark in an interview to acknowledge that they were an MLM is like almost acknowledging essentially that they're a pyramid scheme. And unfortunately, in our economy, MLMs are somehow benedicted to do what they do as long as they follow a set of rules that the largest MLM company in the world in the original Amway created while they were on trial, you know, a couple decades ago. So it's sort of a wag the dog scenario where, you know, because of lobbying and influencing, MLMs have been able to remain legal when the structure itself depends on someone at the top having a downline and sellers and retailers underneath them. And unfortunately, for that model to be sustainable and equitable for everybody, you quickly run out of retailers available on the planet once a company gets to a certain size. Mm-hmm. So to break it down in simple terms, it's a pyramid-shaped business where the people at the top make all the money and that the people at the bottom are scrambling to find more retailers to create their own downlines, and eventually you run out of downline.
You know, it's interesting, Julia, as I watched part of the documentary, I didn't get to the last episode yet, I can't wait. You know, you get this sense that they are selling a lifestyle and it goes beyond just being a representative of the company. Some of the women who were having a hard time in the company described being encouraged to get weight loss surgery. Someone else makes a note that, you know, everybody seems to be blonde who is doing all of this selling. And another one even kind of described it like a cult. What did you observe? What did you synthesize after talking to these women about the culture surrounding LuLaRoe?
Yeah, the culture seemed to be very automaton, you know, this kind of old throwback to this blonde bombshell kind of ingratiating feminine quality of pleasing your husband, looking like you have, you know, no care in the world. Your face is always done up, you're perfect size, and you're also modest about all your accolades, right? So this contortion of the feminine quality from, you know, let's say the 50s was really present in the culture of LuLaRoe. And yes, the blonde quality, this kind of, you know, this lifestyle that is so insidious that as, you know, as this generation of millennials, we're really raised on social media to have a type of slick performance and lifestyle backdrop that is perfect, quote unquote perfect. So that's really the culture that oozed out of this company that I observed. And yeah, it really became, you know, it really seemed cultish because of how much peer pressure there was, how there wasn't really any platform for anybody to have any negative, you know, negative point of view on anything. So when things like this start to happen and it becomes very, you know, hermetically sealed in toxic positivity and selling a dream, this is when the idea of a cult really takes hold, and what I observed is in this company itself.
Jenner, when did things first start going badly for LuLaRoe? It seems like the beginning of the end was the stinky leggings. What happened?
I think what we explore in the docuseries is a confluence of factors. You know, Mark Stidham himself refers to it as catastrophic growth. And I think that, you know, they got to a point in which the business became a lot bigger than the infrastructure they had in place, and that there was no brain trust of experienced corporate leadership to get them through that. They were relying on this nepotism model where only the family could be employed at the C-level, and that everybody had to be, you know, blood-related. And ironically, blood-related, but the man, because the women were encouraged to be having kids constantly, so they were not in the corporate leadership role. It was their husband. So you get to a point where a company gets that big and there's no one with experience, things start to go terribly wrong. And so there was a confluence of not having the experience to handle certain situations, classic things that happen in an MLM where there starts to be a lack of customers for the material, you know, that the people are selling, and then start to have dissatisfied retailers who don't have a market. But I think the death knell was the fact that this made in America, buttery soft quality product was now needing to be outsourced to the developing world in a dark network of factory labor. And they were operating so quickly that there were no quality controls. So it went from, you know, a product that was reliably good and stable to really, really questionable product that wasn't quality controlled, that inside sources tell us, you know, was being manufactured in factories with child labor, all sorts of different things that, you know, start to happen and that are emblematic of the fast fashion world. But fast fashion magnates have a system in place. They have protocols. And when you're explosively growing, you're not paying attention to any of that. And it's like you're trying to, with a fire hose, get leggings out to the world. Bad things happen. And ultimately, they didn't even have the storage for the material, and they were keeping their inventory outside in California in crates, and it was developing mold and other, you know, serious, you know, defects. Not only that, the stitches weren't lined up because no one was quality controlling. So it's a confluence. It's a sort of a perfect storm of issues that would happen for a business that didn't have senior leadership.
My guests are Jenner First and Julie Willoughby Mason. We're talking about LuLaRich, the documentary about the rise and fall of LuLaRoe, the marketing company, clothes marketing company, I should say. You know, it's interesting. Julie, you said something a few minutes ago, and it's been sitting in the back of my brain when you were describing the millennials' lifestyle being dictated by Instagram and things needing to be perfect. And I kept thinking about your previous film, and about the Fyre Festival. Do you see a connection between this film and that film, sort of the ethos of LuLaRich and the ethos of Fyre?
Yes, there's definitely a connection between the two films. Essentially, it's this byproduct we're all living in, supporting covertly, overtly, of being raised on social media. And how, you know, it's a machine that is either like, you know, you either join it or, it goes down on you. So the Fyre Festival was definitely tapping into like a coastal millennial. And I think that this company really tapped into like the majority of America. So I think it's so relatable, both films, in terms of how they were dictated by this internet speak. And, you know, the perfect backdrop, you're going to the Fyre Festival and you need to, you know, have the gorgeous ass and with the string bikini and like your like acrylic nails, et cetera, with like a celebrity and the perfect, you know, color correction. And then with LuLaRoe, the company, you needed to have like the suburban house, the car, the Chevy Tahoe, and, you know, the kids all smiling, mm-hmm. and, you know, pretty much, you know, all, you know, yeah. The millennials of the white woman demographic is more heavy in Lula Rich.
So, Jenna, how do Deanna and Mark, defend themselves? What do they say? I mean, they clearly sat down to have an interview. They put on a really sort of unified front. They've got a very sort of chipper attitude, a little bit of us against the world. Where do they stand on all these lawsuits and all of these accusations that people lost their life savings trying to be part of this company?
I think Deanna and Mark, you know, maintain that if you lost, it's your fault, and that we've created a meritocracy in which hard work is rewarded. And, you know, it sounds great. And I think they know how to speak about their business. And if they didn't know how to speak about their business, even in hard times, they wouldn't have experienced catastrophic growth the way they did. And ultimately, the promise that Deanna made to a handful of women in the very beginning, that this would change their lives, you know, it did come true. And those women became millionaires, but it wasn't scalable. And I think that ultimately, the way that Mark takes over and kind of gets into this corporate speak, this sort of like aspirational, you know, billionaire, self-made billionaire talk, and that Deanna kind of maintains this bubblegum sort of explosive positivity and charm, is a testament to the qualities that each of them brought to the table and that continue to serve them now. Because remember, they're still in business. They're still operational. Mm-hmm. You can go to the website. You can buy a startup package. They've lowered fees from $5,000 to $499. And essentially, what that tells me is that that type of behavior is rewarded in our society. And I think it's a humanistic tale. It's something that you can look at every character in this film, and you can find some way to relate. And that includes Mark and Deanna, because you're encouraged in our society to be a billionaire. You're encouraged through social media to live like a billionaire, to act like a billionaire, talk like a billionaire, have a watch that a billionaire has, go to space with the billionaire, do the whole deal. And the reality is that that's not feasible to anyone, and that 99.99% of the world is not experiencing that. And so I think it's humanistic because people aren't experiencing that, yet they are encouraged to want it. And so if you want it, here's a morality tale about what happens when you get it. And are you going to act that way without ethics and morals, or are you going to take advantage of people, mm-hmm. or are you going to, you know, surrender all that privilege and money to do the right thing? And so we find Mark and Deanna's story, you know, just as relatable as anyone else's. We don't think they're a bad guy, a villain. We think that we're all complicit in this system. We're all taking part in it. We're all consuming it, and we're all driving it. And that's the big wake-up call for viewers and what we hope people will take away.
The name of the film is Lula Rich. It's available to stream on Amazon Prime. I've been speaking with its directors and executive producers, Jenna Furst and Julia Willoughby Mason. Thank you guys for being with us. Thank you for sticking through. We're having some audio issues. You've been really great about that. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.